This meeting for March 17, 2015. We'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Welcome. I don't know if we need to introduce each other or what.
I think we probably would want to because I don't think Carlene knows you folks.
We'll start over with the visitors out there.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And introduce each other.
I'm Julie Heavily.
I'm Aaron Swan. I'm the Public Facilities Superintendent here. And
I'm Adam Heberle, Heberle Engineering.
Your turn.
I'm Carlene Cook.
Michelle Silver.
Floyd Van Sickle.
John Lusby.
Adam Cernowski.
Patricia Klassen.
Mike will be here.
Oh, he will be? Okay. Vicki Luther.
Christy Gilbert.
Okay. We've done the introductions. Do we have a test at the end?
You're first.
Wait a minute. I didn't take notes.
Yeah, you forgot, didn't you? No media, so we won't have to worry about that. Approval of minutes. You had a chance to look at your minutes, I assume. It's from the workshop as well as the last meeting.
I make a motion that we approve the minutes of February the 17th, 2015.
I second.
Okay, motion is second.
Commissioner Klassen? Yay or nay?
Yay.
Commissioner Cernowski?
Aye.
Commissioner Van Sickle?
Aye.
Commissioner Sumner?
Aye.
Commissioner Clark?
Aye.
And Chair Lusby?
Aye. Okay, move right into the transportation, the pavement management program. I don't know. Aaron, get to present that, I gather.
Yeah.
Can we get popcorn?
I've been bringing popcorn. We're here tonight to kind of share with you guys what we've come up with on for street selection for our pavement management program. And that includes the slurry seals, like we did last year, and the overlays as well. And look for your input on street selection. So we're going to have a little informational presentation by Adam, and then we're going to kind of get into which streets that are on the list and the meet the criteria, and see what you guys think about picking some streets. So.
Hopefully some of you went out and looked at some of the streets that we
did.
Okay, good.
Can you explain the difference between each one of these processes?
Sure.
I'm curious between, you know, Cape Seal and an overlay.
Is that part of your presentation?
Yep.
Okay.
Well, kind of.
Okay.
Oh. Go ahead.
Let's hit the first slide. We can talk about some of the.
You guys can move back here if you want.
Kind of the different methods. John and Adam and you guys might move or you might look there. It's up to you.
You can come sit out here if you want.
So when you look at so this is a graph of asphalt pavements and kind of the aging of them. And what you have on the left hand side is a pavement condition index, and you evaluate it starting at 100 and going down. There's different evaluations like potholing and rutting. So like when you come up to a signal, you'll see it rutted at times. Or you have block cracking or transverse cracking or petite cracking or these different things. So as you go along this graph here, it goes down. And one thing I'd like to applaud the city for is your proactiveness in the pavement preservation, because most of the city streets is up in this range between preservation and resurfacing. You may have a couple down in the major rehabilitation or reconstruction, but not very many. Most everything is up in the pavement preservation room. And as you see here, when you look at a square yard of so what is pavement preservation and what is resurfacing? And that kind of will answer your question, Floyd. So pavement preservation for city streets are slurry seals. And a slurry seal is like a sand asphalt mixture that is about an eighth to a quarter inch thick.
it covers the asphalt, it fills in the voids, it gives it, and asphalt's an oil product, it's kind of like a rubber product, and if you've been around like a rubber or plastic, when it ages, it breaks up. You know, you look at an old, let's say a toy out in the yard, it's a kid's toy, or some part on a boat or a car or something, plastic after a while will chip up and break, and that's because it's an oil product. Well, asphalts are the same way. They're an oil product. And when you put a slurry seal over the top, it encases the existing asphalt and actually kind of primes it some and covers it up and gives it more of an oil, kind of gives it back its oil, or it stops the aging process, that the top surface of. So that's like a city street. There's also a microsurfacing that it's kind of like a slurry seal on steroids. It's not something you usually do on city streets because the cost, so a microseal has a little harder rock, it has a cement base instead of an asphalt base. It has, it's just more expensive and it works better on higher facilities. So you don't usually see that in a city. If you're looking at like a rural county road, chip seals are the way to go on that. It's a heavier oil, so a slurry seal is kind of a brittle material. It'll fracture and break a little bit more. A chip seal is a heavy shot of oil with a rock mat over the top that's rolled in. So it has its own advantages as well. But in city applications, it works pretty good. But the downsides of it are, it's a little more robust than a slurry seal. But the downsides of it are the surface texture. So the surface texture is kind of rough. It's fine for running down a county road or a highway. But on a city, it's not the best. But it's not the worst either. There's some benefits of it. So when you look at the next step in preservation, still in the preservation realm, is called a cape seal. There's a point. So let's talk about resurfacing and then back up to cape seals. So resurfacing is where you either grind out the existing asphalt or you overlay it with new asphalt. And as you can see there, the cost is $1.75 to $2 a square foot versus preservation is 20 cents to $1.25, depending on the kind of the application of what you're doing. So there's a point, and especially on city streets, where you have some cracking, but it's not like fatigue cracking, like alligatoring, where it's going to pothole. It's just kind of older age asphalt, and it's starting to crack up some. It goes back to kind of the siding on your house. If you don't repaint your house, it starts breaking up, you know, and it starts pulling apart and stuff. And that's kind of what asphalt does too. So we're pretty familiar with asphalt overlays and inlays and things like that. Let's go to cape seals now. Cape seals are halfway in between. They're about a half to a third the price of a resurfacing. And they are, they're a shock of, actually, run to the end because I have kind of a slide. What they are is, you see there, it's a chip on the bottom and a slurry on the top. So the chip, you see that bottom layer, that's your oil layer. That oil is very good for bridging cracks and not letting cracks reflect through as much. So if you have a city street that is not quite an asphalt overlay scenario, but it's really too far for a slurry seal, a cape seal is a great way to go because it's half to a third of the price. And so you have the chip part, and then you have a slurry that goes over the top, and the slurry that goes over the top gives you the surface texture that you're normally looking for in a city street. So that's kind of one of the benefits of it. Does that kind of answer your question on different types?
Something like this, you're saying that the oil, I mean, does it go down into the existing cracks and stuff?
Yes.
I mean,
yep.
When you've got a road that's cracked and obviously the water, you know, rainwater, whatever is getting down there, is that compromising the base, road base? I mean, is that,
yes,
basically, yep, that's cutting the life of the road itself?
Yeah, there's three things that kill a road: water, water, and water. I mean, that's just like, water just destroys roads. That's kind of an old adage, but it's true. When you have that cracking up, the water infiltrates it, and when you have a pothole, it just makes it worse and it accelerates it. And if we go back to the graph, that's actually what happens at kind of the poor, failed is it really goes steep and it just takes off. So what you do on a slurry seal is you tend to do a crack seal over the top and then you do a slurry seal. If you do a chip seal, you don't have to do a crack seal because the chip oil actually goes down the cracks and seals it very well. Same thing with the cave seal. It's a chip seal with a slurry on top. So that's kind of the basic mechanics of pavement preservation.
What's life expectancy on a cave seal?
They're at 10-15 years, where a slurry seal is like around 7 to 10 years. You know, they get farther out there. There's a whole section. When we did the slurry seal last year, I grabbed one of the pavement black line, the owner of it, who's done pavement press forever. And I looked in the streets and said, this seems like a cave seal. But when I had him here and he was doing a work in the city, I grabbed him and took him and said, hey, what do you think the solution is for this network of streets? And I'll show that to you just because we're talking about it. The network of streets is right in there, which is, hard to see,
Green Tree
Avenue.
That's all mobile home.
Yeah. And it's there's some cracking in there, but not real bad. So that's kind of the basic mechanics. So while we're talking about cave seal, let's talk about the downside of cave seal. There's a lot of pros to it. It's a third of the price. It bridges cracks. It's a great preservation project, you know, process. So one downside of it is there are a few chip seal contractors out there that are mainline that do projects for ODOT and like federal highways and things like that. But predominantly in this area, the county is the main person that does the chip seals, because they do most all of their county roads with it. And they actually have a very good pavement preservation program. So when you look at doing like this Rain Tree area, or there's you know, like that street there is a cave seal as well as that one, you really have to make an investment of saying, okay, we're going to take, you know, part of our overlay funds, and we're going to hire the county, or we're going to put out a big enough contract to get some of these guys from out of state. In essence, I mean, there's ones that are in Reno that do it. There's a company in Bend that does it. There is, I don't know, there might be somebody in Eugene, but pretty much Bend, Reno, you know, so it really is out of the area when you look at chip sealing. But the county might be open to doing some of that work. So for cave seals, it's probably something down the road, as Aaron and I talked about, it's probably something down the road a couple of years to consider. On some of these streets, but it's got a few hoops to it, but it's a very good product and it can save you quite a bit of money as well.
And who does that type work?
The cave seals. So what you would do is the chip seal would be done by, let's say, the county, or High Desert Aggregate Paving is a company in Bend, or what's the company? Intermountain Slurry Seal. They did Crater Lake this last summer. We were up there with them, and they come out of Reno.
Does Copeland do that type of work, or?
I don't, Copeland from?
From the Grants Pass area? Because I know they've been doing an awful lot of road work.
Right. It'd be worth asking to see if they'd have a chip spreader, because it's really the piece of equipment that is the spreader that's the challenge.
And there's also several companies in Portland that do road work. So I know my husband used to work for
companies.
Sure, yeah. And there's probably some up in there, yeah. You know, there are them around, but it takes a big enough contract to make it worth their while, too.
Our slurry seal last year came out of
Vancouver.
Vancouver.
Yeah, so for slurry seal work, you have Vancouver, you have Eugene.
It's equipment.
You have Reno, and then you have, I think that's the only three. So it's all pretty much out of state. The company in Eugene actually went out of business, but they restarted under a different name. The Sun did. And there's another company in Sacramento. So really, when you get into pavement press, it's a little bit outside of the area, you know, for it. So, but they're in the area all the time. I mean, the county always has slurry seal projects, as well as City of Roseburg. And so, you know, they're in the area. They're coming through. they just go from job to job to job in the circuit.
If at all possible, I'd like to keep it in Oregon if we could.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So let's back up a little bit and just talk. So we've kind of gone over this. So one of the things that on pavement preservation, when you see this line here, this is your slurry seals, and they're good for about 7 years or so. And you know, they're about $2 a square yard. So there's a point where these things kind of go down, like, you know, the underlaying asphalt is aging, the overlaying asphalt, let's say the slurry seal is doing pretty good, and it tapers off, and then you do a little bit more and it tapers off. But it is trending all down to some degree. That's just one main point to point out there. Now let's talk about, there's, in the transportation realm, in terms of, all of you have probably heard of the Americans with Disabilities Act. You know, it was enacted in the 80s, I think. And there's been different flavors of it in terms of different issues. And really what it comes down to is somebody that has is in a wheelchair or is visually impaired should have an access to a building, especially a state or federal or city building. You know, and so what has happened over the years is you have on this side, so up there you have the Department of Justice, and we have federal highways. So the Department of Justice always had control over the ADA kind of requirements or regulations, and they were always building facilities and things like that. And the highway guys would go, like, how does this apply to, you know, public right-of-way, you know, your city streets and curb cuts and things like that. So last August 9, 2009, Department of Justice and Federal Highway came together, and they issued this clarification. And it's kind of a new law, it's kind of clarification. It's actually clarification of a law that was back in the 80s and 90s. But really, that date is important to make sure from that date on you follow what it talks about. So what is it talking about? So what it's talking about is what is triggering for pavement preservation, what triggers the need to do curb cuts, so that when somebody's in a wheelchair, they come from a sidewalk down to the road or an intersection. So you think of an intersection like a signal or a four-way intersection with stops or something like that. So what things are maintenance? You know, we have painting or striping lanes, that doesn't trigger it. Crack filling, that doesn't trigger it. Chip seals don't trigger it, slurry seals don't trigger it, fog seals, scrub seals, joint crack seals, all of those different things as we go down through it. Pavement patching, so if you have a pothole and you go out and you fix it, it's not going to trigger this. But one of the things on the next slide is the things that do trigger it is your new layer of asphalt, your reconstruction, your thin lift overlays, so like half-inch, three-quarter-inch overlays, which is kind of a new technology that's out there, and your cave seals trigger. Your in-place asphalt recycling, so that's a process where they take an existing road and grind it up, and it's a cold process, not a hot process in most cases, and it actually churns it up, injects oil into it, and lays it back down as a new road. It's really kind of cool, but it has real select applications that it works and some that don't. So just a little information for you, knowing a little bit about that. So what we're talking about, the main thing when we look at these is these curb cuts or curb ramps. So what are the criteria? There's no lip on the front. So when you think of those little tires, that's so that it's flat, because if you're in a wheelchair and you go down an incline, it'll dump you on your nose. I mean, it really will. I won't even tell you that. Well, I will. There's a guy I worked with at ODOT that had spent years and years building these things, and then he broke his ankle. He's a pretty good-sized guy like I am, and he had to run around in a wheelchair. He says, absolutely, that is critical to make sure that thing is flat. Because he said, oh man, you're coming down, I'll just put you on your nose. And here you go with a broken ankle, you know, and you're trying to keep yourself up. So the 11% difference, one path coming down, so there's like a four foot landing up there, and then from that landing down, it's just one grade. So it, when you're on those wheels, they take you to the path of least resistance, straight down, so you don't want to have too many different ramps, too many different grades. And then the truncated domes. And the truncated domes are an indicator of a sidewalk to a road transition. So that's kind of what they are.
So we basically have to realize that if we're going to do a Cape Seal, we're going to have to also, if it doesn't already have it, install all of these.
Yes. So if you're doing a Cape Seal or an inlay or an overlay or any of those, anything but a slurry seal, pretty much, you're going to be upgrading these. So they cost, they're pretty spendy, and they're $800 to $1,500 or $12 a square foot. And some you can do truncated domes, adding those for $42 roughly, and you know, all the other criteria is met. So that's just one thing I just wanted to educate you some. So when we look about, when we think about selecting streets, we can think of that's a real cost that is legally bound at this point to make sure that those are, you know, taken care of. And I can show you.
Now, Adam, that's only where there are sidewalks currently.
Right.
Is that right? So we don't have to.
You don't have to put in sidewalks.
We don't have to install sidewalks just to put
in. If they don't have them, then you don't have to worry about it.
Right. If they're there and they don't provide a way down, then we have to do that. But if they're.
And that's not a bad thing.
No, it's absolutely not.
Absolutely.
Not
a great thing.
As somebody who pushes a wagon around here, believe me, that's not a bad thing.
Right, yeah.
No, and I'm glad you pointed that out, because a lot of people look at it as it's a negative thing, and it's a bad thing, and it's a cost. It's like, hey, if you're in a wheelchair, you'd be really happy to have a ramp that was halfway navigable with a wheelchair.
Or even just pushing a stroller around something.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, that is absolutely, no. So I thought I'd show you a few of these. Umatilla's one. This is Google Earth and Street View. I don't know if you've played this before, but you know that corner there, Aaron?
Mm-hmm.
That was correct. That's an old image.
Very old.
Oh, yeah,
because that's sidewalk.
So, curb and a sidewalk there.
Yeah, so I was going to show you this section, for example. Umatilla is the one that actually passes mustard out of it. There's 12 on Umatilla, but it's not there, so I can't show it to you. But this would be an example of, let's go on the other side. These would be some examples where you'd have to upgrade them, of some of these. And so if you didn't... if you didn't have the sidewalk here, so let's visualize you just had the curb, then you don't have to do anything, right? You're not going to put a curb ramp into nowhere. And that's a part of the letter, and it's clarified in the letter. So just, I mean, they're just so when you think, that's...
We were looking at Umatilla seriously as a overlay street, a grinded overlay. It's starting to go pretty good. There's a lot of cracks and unevenness and that sort of thing.
What constituted, how did they go about figuring out which ones to put on this and which ones not to?
Well,
there were some streets like over at First Street off of, right in that area. First Street's really bad shape too.
Well, that's why we're here tonight. Actually, we put some, just went around and picked some streets, and for the slurries, we kind of wanted to focus in the areas where we were last year to kind of close out those areas. We had some stuff in Westlake, we had some stuff out east, but we're here tonight to get your guys' input, and we have a list, but anything that you see that, you know, that warrants, we could have easily overlooked something, so
yeah.
That's why we're here for you, with you guys tonight. So
Aaron and I, back in February, drove through and we looked at different streets, and ones that would hit slurry seal and ones that would be overlays and ones that would be Cape Seal candidates and things like that. And then I went back through and looked at it a lot closer and looked at curb ramps and estimated some costs and some things like that. And that's kind of how that list came out is, and as you notice, the slurry seal list is pretty expensive, you know. But that's good. That's where you want to be as a city. You want to just be doing pavement protective work on your streets and not have to do overlays.
The protection coats over it to keep things up.
That's right.
Try to avoid the big rebuild.
So,
what about the ones that are full of potholes and breaking apart and stuff? So, how do you relate? Which one should you work on first? Try to keep these others upgraded, or where do you spend the money?
Yeah, and that's a real balance. One good thing is we have approximately, you know, that choice has been roughly made for $40,000 for slurry seals and $130,000 for overlays. So we kind of have that guiding post already set somewhat for the budgets, which need to be finalized, I understand, but, you know, that's kind of where we're headed.
That's what we're proposing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Same as last year, basically.
And if you look at that spreadsheet on slurry seals, I think it's like $250,000 worth of slurry seals. So if you look at 5 years, 6 years, you're gonna have all those streets taken care of. So in a 5-year program, that, you know, 5-6 years somewhere in that range, it looks pretty good. So.
Now the numbers you're throwing out now, is that including all the streets that you have shown us here? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. So, like, this is the west side, and so when we think of here, that's like Westlake, and
that's the old
Gulf View there.
That's across the street.
Yeah, it's by Forts Pond.
Yeah, so Forts Pond would be right here. And then, you know, as we go towards the east, you see these other streets here. And so one thing, too, to highlight, so when you look at this, there's those streets over here are slurry / chip. You could chip them if you wanted because there's no sidewalks or curbs in the area. So that, you could chip them. It's a little bit more robust, a little harder surface finish. But for now, we've put them under the slurry seal category. So just in terms of the list, that's kind of where they came from.
Just briefly, if you go back out to the west there with West Lake and Gulf View and those, you can see the darker there are the ones we did last year. West Lake, that long one there, that comes off of Church Road and heads back to the east. And then Gulf View, if we can button those up, then that whole area is pretty much done for us for a while.
So this area in here is fairly new.
That's new and we haven't done anything yet.
So once we do this in here and that in there, that whole area is probably looking pretty good for 5 or 6 years to not go back in there.
So what about the first section of Dovetail there?
That's new.
We're looking at that. That's more of a grind and a overlay. It's in pretty rough shape.
That's the entrance?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The entrance back to the Dovetail to the south, right?
Right, the red section they've got there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like 150 feet, 200 feet.
Yeah,
long,
just short little section there.
Going into west.
I didn't think it was all that bad.
You know, last year it didn't look so bad, but actually I've got some pictures of it I can show you. Just for an example, I'll show you some pictures of it.
It's degraded to a pretty good level, and it's there's some alligator ring and there's some unevenness and
that fine clay it's sitting on.
Okay, let's see here. We were looking at this early, so I'm going to jump out of this and go back to photos. And this is right in the area, I think. Yeah, this would be.
There you are.
Okay, no. Here we are.
Yeah, there you are right there.
So as we, that would be an ADA upgrade you need to do. That's just why I have a photo of it when you look at that. Just so it turns it out. So this little section here has a pretty high volume. It's a lot of entrance, a lot of out people, a lot of turning. And that's what your cracking is looking like. So I'll show you on another slide, but so that's another kind of pattern of cracking you see. So when you get below 5-6 inches on your cracking in a spider web like that, that points to a subgrade failure. It's an alligator fatigue cracking. And I'll show you on another slide of what the evolution. So you can kind of see over here, you have a deeper, you know, a more smaller piece, I guess. And if you notice right here, there's a big gap. That's kind of like right in here, there's a big gap. That's because the asphalt's rolling and hitting together and chipping and hitting together and chipping. And I'll show you another photo.
It's kind of the beginning of the end when it starts to do that. It's
Would the city really want to start working on that at this time when they're planning on doing, building 72 homes there and the big equipment that they're going to, you know, there's no other way to get up there, but...
This is on the other, other side of the road.
This is on the south side.
This is on the south side. Most of those are built out.
This is that little piece that's going into Westlake.
Oh, okay. Oh, I know where you're talking.
It's just the little section near the south, right? Cam Robinson lives right here.
Dovetail on your side, Patricia, is still in pretty good...
It's pretty good shape.
It's pretty good condition.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. It's that other side that's really...
This would be this section right here. So you've got Dovetail, and then you have this little piece right there. So everything else in Westlake going to the left and the right looks pretty good. On the right-hand side, you still see... you see alligator cracking with some vines coming through it, which is usually a subgrade problem. But from a management standpoint, my recommendation is, and this is what I hope that you would do, is just crack seal that area and let it ride. Same thing with this. It doesn't make sense to do this right now. It's at a rebuild, at a reconstruct, rebuild stage, at least taking all the asphalt off. Just let it run until the pothole is good, bad, and then fix it. Get another 10 years out of it, you know, that little section of road. That's what I would recommend anyway. Because you're going to have to take all the asphalt out.
To redo the base.
Yeah, and you might need to get into the base, or you might try a different technique of using like a paving or reinforcing fabric or something like that. But you could be in a scenario where you're digging up the base too. But any of those are 10 years down the road. So when we think of you know, alligator cracking, just a little education, you see like something this size, and you go, oh, that's pretty good. You know, let's say 4 to 5 inches. But then you have these little chunks. You can see that spot right there. And you see, you know, these things start to open up. What you'll see in, let's say, 3 years down the road is you'll see some pretty good potholes in that area where they start rocking and rocking. More water is infiltrated, more water, and they rock together, and then they start chunking and breaking up. So that's kind of the evolution of asphalt. You know, that's going to... Yeah.
So is this what's proposed for the coming year? Or is this just...
This is just the total list. So this would be... You've got, in terms of the slurry seal, we have a $40,000 budget, and there's roughly like $250,000 worth of slurry seal down there, so...
Connie, I don't know if I told you, I hope I did, but this panel, the Planning Commission, is also our Transportation Committee. Did I tell you? Okay.
Yeah.
So that's the piece that you're looking at now, and they're just sharing so that you folks can listen to this and then tell them which ones you'd like to see a priority.
Yeah, so you guys don't have Valentine highlighted at all. Is that just because it's beyond repair? Or?
I was just going to mention that is because it's been taken off from being done this year, and that is like worse than that street you just showed.
Right.
I'm like driving like this to even get down the road now, and so can we do anything with that this year?
Well, Valentine is more of a, you know, we're looking at rebuilding that entire street
with
sidewalks
and,
and new storm and the whole Marianne.
Yep.
So it's a whole, it's coming out of a whole different pot of money. And it was scheduled for this year, and North Comstock kind of took precedent over it, so it got maybe boosted back a year or two, but it's not off the list. It's on the list.
But until a year or two, it's going to continue to get... It's got big potholes in it, and it's getting worse and worse every year.
It's narrow, and it's...
But it needs to be completely reconstructed, and we don't have that money.
It's a reconstruct rather than a pavement management. Issues.
So this isn't all the roads that are bad, basically.
No.
This is just the ones that you plan on...
That fit in
manage.
For... Yeah.
So this doesn't even include the tear it up and start...
The really bad, really, okay. Really bad ones are off.
So I guess on that one, are they going to do any kind of just pothole?
If there's potholes, we can get out there and patch them. You know, they're...
The ones that they filled last year are just all
kind
bad.
Of coming up and...
Sure.
They're close to Kalapuya, there's a pretty good one.
That little section of First Street that's got a lake in it.
Oh, by the diner?
Yeah, behind the diner.
That one's a pretty rough street.
Yeah.
We have drainage problems there, and it's, yeah.
It's rough. Corner, I saw the second, the corner, everybody cuts that corner, and the pothole there at the edge of the corner, the blacktop this winter has been chipping out of there, and getting pretty good pothole there.
Tina, if you guys want to email us your list of potholes, I just don't want us to get too far off track tonight because we'll be here all night talking about potholes and things that don't have much to do with our pavement management program.
I was just
But seriously, email them because...
I figured it wasn't... We only had one time a year that we did the pothole fill.
Well...
No, we do. We have cold mix that we...
Yeah, if we can do the cold mix, but the hot...
Oh, well...
We do both, but yeah.
So projects for installing curb, gutter, and sidewalk are exclusive of these projects, right? And are any of those on the plans for the coming year?
Well, when they do Comstock, if that's what we end up doing this year with our big money, there'll be curb, gutter, and sidewalk, and we'll be paying a small portion of that, which is still big money for the city. When we get Valentine done, it'll be curb, gutter, and sidewalk. Okay. You know, those complete, total reconstruction projects, yes, otherwise.
So you're saying for this particular project that we're looking
at? Well, you're looking at?
$40,000 budget and $250,000 worth of projects.
Well, that's for the slurry.
So we kind of put it in an order of priorities.
Yes. So what you're going to be picking tonight is more of a priority. You know, like this year we think we have to do this amount, and then next year we'll talk again. But,
and yeah, also overlay.
What's that?
Overlay as well.
Right.
Yes, so 40 for overlay.
40 for slurries and 130 for overlays. Ground overlays.
Well, that's what we had last year, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
This year,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we're not increasing that at all.
Well, I'm not proposing it at this time, but we'll see what happens at the budget.
Isn't it scheduled to go? I mean, isn't the five-year plan for it to go up?
Well, I think it's 133,000 actually this year and 41 or something. Because they're trying to do some sort of a slow increase in that. But that's finance that's doing that. I didn't put that increase in there.
Well, my thought on, since there's 250,000 or whatever of streets that need to be done, I don't know every single one of these streets and can drive around town all day doing that, which is more of your job.
Uh-huh, sure.
And you're the experts on this. So. My recommendation, personally, would be that you would know in what order would be probably the best order to do it by which are the worst down.
Sure.
And so I would go on your recommendation of the order.
Or which are the best and you can do more of to protect against getting to be the worst.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Is it better to start with the worst to keep them from becoming...
It's actually
total
better
rebuild projects, or is it better to start with the ones that are still
yeah,
okay?
It's better to start with the best and go to the worst, because the worst are just money sucks. You can just throw money at them. Then you have nothing for the rest of the city. And so that's kind of, it's a different way of thinking. We're like, man, the street is horrible. It's like, well, let it keep going. Keep these ones good. You know, it's, you know.
It's not going to get any better.
Well, and I liked your idea of completing one area.
Yes.
Where you had did some last year and then. Go ahead and finish that area, which changes the dynamics of whether it's priority, best, worst, whatever, it completes an area.
Right.
So plus these contractors, they don't want to move all over street to street. They kind of want to work in an area, and they don't mind moving a couple of times, but they don't want to just, oh, get this 100 feet over here and then get this, you know, so we get a little better bang for our buck if we kind of concentrate in an area.
Yeah, I was... This question answered one of mine too, that which is best to do, you know, where do preventive maintenance come in to, you know, at what point do we make decision which should be done?
Aaron, I read a article, and I think it was Chicago or someplace like that, where they have come up with using recycled tires that they're blowing into these potholes and cracks and I mean I didn't understand what I was reading, but I'm going, hey, this sounds cool. You know, and the idea is that not only does it prevent further cracking in that area, but from what I understood, it also is good for the cars and good for the tires and a smoother, quieter ride. Mm-hmm. And I mean, they were just really bragging about.
Have you heard of that, Adam?
You know, there was a process that City LA used, and they bought a machine. It was a cold, recycled in-place thing. The machine was $1 million just on itself. For them, it paid off because they could go through them. It's a big operation, City LA. So there are applications where some of those work, but for small cities, it doesn't usually work.
No, I was just more or less asking,
because
I had no idea what I was reading. All I could think about was, this sounds really good.
Right.
You know, I mean, you're doing, getting rid of tires and also...
To put it in a little perspective, in the spring, I went to a pavement preservation conference in Bend, or it was actually Redmond, and... you know, they go through all these different things, and that was not something they brought up on the patching section. So they talked about patching more with traditional asphalt. And they had a few different cold mix products that were a little different that worked pretty good, but nothing of what you're talking about there. But
whenever they try to include recycling products with making it into something that's useful, it's usually cost more. Even when they tried it with, but I guess the county tried it years ago with the recycling of glass using it as an aggregate. You know, by the time you get through putting it in there, your costs were higher than if you just went ahead and did it in the first place. It wasn't that great of an advantage.
When you look at asphalt, though, when we think about asphalt, you can take recycled asphalt and use recycled asphalt 30% into your new asphalt blend and have a very good product. And that's a kind of a proven method that most DOTs use and most contractors can produce. But you're right, John. A lot of these things are kind of pipe dreams where people are like, let's go, and then they're like, no, this didn't work so good. For example, the county actually used a fiber. So have you ever heard of reinforced concrete in terms of fiber reinforced concrete? So this fiber goes in the concrete and it locks it together some. Well, there was a salesman that came around about a year and a half ago to City of Roseburg, and maybe they stopped off here, and they came out with this fiber reinforced asphalt. And they would say, so when you get into the pavement mechanics, there's something called a structure number. It's the strength of the asphalt, or the number of easels, which is your 18,000 pound loads going over it. Not to go too much into detail. But when you get into the structure number of the asphalt, their claim was that it actually increased it. Well, at this pavement conference I went to, there was a fellow named Jim Huddleston there, and Jim Huddleston is the president of the Asphalt Paving Association. He is a guru of asphalt. He was on the board with ASHTO when they wrote the pavement design manual that's nationwide that pretty much everybody uses and all these different things. And his point about it is they make these claims and they use this graph in this manual that was not intended to do what it's doing. So, you know, like the county, they utilized this last year and probably will find in about 5 years, because it takes time to really see what it does, that's probably not any better. It's just, you know, it's a more expensive product, and it's probably not any better because they haven't proven the concept. You know, and that was the Jim Huddleston's thing. He's one of the most kind of premier people in Oregon for asphalts, and he's like, it doesn't work. I'm happy to sit down with people and explain to them why it doesn't work. Don't invest your money. So not to go off track. So Aaron and I kind of made a list of, so on the right over here, there's some X's. And we made a list of kind of some streets that we thought would be pretty good. And this is the Westlake area. And if you look on the bottom, the total is $21,000, $21,268. And if we go to the other area, so if we kind of go towards, and I'll show you on the map of where this is. If we kind of go more towards, let me zoom in. Kind of over on the other side of town where we actually did quite a bit of slurry seals in this area. What we're proposing is that you consider doing Jade, and you consider doing 4th over to, was it Grove?
Just Opal.
Opal?
Yeah.
So 4th Opal over to Opal. You do this street here, you do Agate Street there, and I think we had maybe 3rd and 2nd Corps down there. So let's jump back to the spreadsheet, and that puts you right around your $40,000 mark. So you have this one, which is second court, third court. You've got opal, you've got agate, jade, and foil. And that's 21,000. So 21 and 21 is 42, 43,000. We want to have a little bit more on our list to trim off of than in terms of, we can always take a street off to meet the budget. So if we're a little over when we bid it, we'll just pull a street off. So that's not a problem in terms of, does that sound reasonable to you guys for streets to consider?
Just to me.
That kind of closes out that
right
northeastern area as well. Kind of finishes that up for us. And then next year, of course, we'd maybe move back toward the center of town a little bit more with.
I guess part of them got done last year, didn't it, over there?
Part of it did, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That would be tying it together.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the $40,000 slurry budget?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You spend on that neighborhood?
That neighborhood and then out west.
And then, yeah. And so the $130,000 overlay budget?
Mm-hmm.
Is the Cape Seal included in the overlay budget because of what it triggers?
Yeah, it's not at this point. Yeah.
Okay.
So let's talk about overlays. If we go to overlays, let's look at the total dollar amount here, $448. So that's 2 or 3 years worth of, probably 3 years worth of slurries or overlay work in terms of $130,000. So, and there's a few streets on here you may consider doing, and there's a few that you may not consider doing, and I'll show you one of them in particular. So Lane Street here, it's a little street that is serves like a 3 or 4 houses, and it's a street that's 12 to 14 feet wide. You could overlay it, it's on the list, but it's probably not the best bang for your buck for right now. So that's just an example of, it is on the list, but it's probably not the best investment. So
better get the higher traffic areas.
That's
mm-hmm.
right.
Mm-hmm.
And if you notice, when we looked at these, like Umatilla and these, we're more focusing on the kind of thoroughfares between 6th and 4th and Central. So, because that's where people are going to be, you know, if you're on a side street, you've got to turn out of a side street onto the main street to go somewhere. You know, people aren't going to go side street, side street, because you have only stop signs, right? And that's, so we're focusing more on the kind of north to south routes. So.
Mm-hmm. Is that Sherwood on there? Is that what I see, the bottom part of Sherwood?
Yes, so.
Because Sherwood is, you're eventually going to do something with Sherwood as far as drainage and everything else, right?
Right, correct.
What about 6th Street up there, about 200 yards or less from Madonna? There's one little section there that is all busted up. And the rest of it is not so bad, but that one little section.
From Mardonna, north of 4th, and then up around the corner by Art Adams' place, and then west for 100 yards is terrible. And we don't know exactly what.
Not too bad, and then you get that one dip area where the valley comes through there.
Drainage.
And it's just horrible.
Comes down those driveways and gets right on the road, and it's just it's not supposed. It was supposed to be a dead end, but people started going through there and kind of kept going through there, and now it's sort of a quasi through street, and it's in need of a rebuild, and that upper Mardonna as well. People
and drainage as well.
Really struggling
because it's got the shale level right underneath.
Yeah, 4th Street up on Madonna is needs.
It's yeah. So those.
So where do we want to put the money in? That's the question. What's your recommendations on what we should?
So back to what we were talking about before, we feel like that's kind of a lost cause up there, and so until we figure out how to engineer that or change it or make it better, you know, we'll just keep filling in those potholes kind of thing. But our, you know, so we have quite a few streets here that qualify for an overlay, but similarly to how we put together the slurry, I think we were looking at Branton and Branton Street. Umatilla from Central 4th.
So Brant would be over here.
It's on the west side, yeah.
Brandon was right there.
Now, Brandon's not curbed and guttered and sidewalked.
Right.
So it's it'd just be a regular old grinding overlay. We wouldn't have to do the maybe right on Central. We might have to change the
sidewalk.
Make sure that the handicap the ADA ramps were fine.
Yeah. Is there any notes in the spreadsheet on Brandon on that? It probably doesn't have anything. If it does, Brandon Street, it doesn't show anything, so there's probably not any ADA stuff there.
We were looking at about 35 grand on Brandon. We were looking at Umatilla from Central to 4th. And that's the one of the main ones going up to the school, and it's starting to show some pretty good alligatory and some wear. And I think that there were several ADA ramps that we're going to have to be changing.
Mm-hmm. Quite a few.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's quite a few.
So that's about 73rd
and 4th Street, both.
Mm-hmm.
The one side of 3rd, I think, has sidewalk by the school.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it does.
Yep.
11 out of 12 curb ramps.
Yeah. And I just said it's roughly 20,000 just as a number. When we get into actual designing it, you can get into more of the detail. But there's a pretty good chunk of ADA ramps in there that would be upgraded.
And then we have one that 4th Avenue from Crown Point to Casa de Loma is a pretty rough spot, but we think we can, there'll be a slight dig out right in the middle of it, but other than that, we can get by with the grinding overlay there and get that surface better. You know, as you know, we did from Sherwood over to Crown Point in our overlay program 2 years ago, and it really looks nice. It's really good. And then it just stops right there at Crown Point and turns ugly. So we'd like to get that pushed through and make that sort of complete over to Casa de Loma. It's pretty good. 4th is once again in good shape over there. There's just a little stretch there that's pretty rough.
So Aaron, how much of this can you get done for $130,000?
Those three that I just mentioned.
Really?
Brenton,
all of
them? Umatilla to 4th and Crown Point. 4th Street from Crown Point to Casa.
That's quite a bit.
We feel like we can get close on that.
Makes sense.
So the areas that are currently orange for Cape Seal or pink, how long before they turn red?
You know, like, take Mordana, for example. I drove over that 4 or 5 times with that. Because it's really close to the slurry seal. But man, I wouldn't go to an overlay on that thing because it's a lot of money. And why do that if you don't have to? So when you think about a Cape Seal, you're probably looking at 10, 15 years and you're looking at like an overlay on that. Because it's really in between. A slurry won't quite work. There's just a little bit too much cracking on it. But an overlay is a lot of money because it's really wide. You know, it's a really wide street. So, you know, 10 years, let's say, somewhere in that range.
I'm down in each sidewalk.
Are you looking at any of the streets that, I mean, a lot of the school buses use?
Yeah, school buses really affect your streets. Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, I guess I'm tagging that 3rd Avenue in front of East Primary
now,
because I walk that street daily.
Mardonna from Central to 1st is heavy truck traffic. I mean, semi-traffic. And stuff going into Shops Mart and Bicorn.
Oh, right.
Less
so
right
here, yeah.
You get a lot of that. And I live a block over on Terrace, and the semis like to go. That's posted for weight, but they still like to go around the block.
Around the block.
And the school buses also use Terrace.
And that's why Terrace is red there.
Yeah, that you only took Terrace up past 1st, which I didn't understand.
Well, because it's rougher down there, we want to overlay it. But up above,
you can slurry it.
You can slurry it.
Yeah, there's a break, there's a seam in there, and it's actually just on the other side of 1st. And then there's an aging asphalt difference as well as the truck traffic. So
until you get to top of the hill there where it's...
They slurried that about 9 years ago, so it's
okay
at the end of its
sure
useful life.
Yep. Yeah, you get 7 to 10 years roughly out of them. And yeah, it's right there.
Now, so, when they do an overlay, do they grind at the gutter and then overlay to it?
Yes,
to make
that's
it level?
Yes.
Right now, it's probably about, the asphalt's about this much lower than the gutter is.
Yeah, so what you want to do is grind at your gutter lines and roll your asphalt. So if you can, if your middle section's in good shape, you want to overlay the middle and grind down at the curves and match it all together so it all flows and is nice. So, yeah.
The machinery you were talking about that grinds it up, mixes it up, puts it back down again, is that life expectancy as long as an overlay or not?
You know, there's some real interesting things about the cold recycled. It works in some cases, it doesn't in others. I don't think you're quite the life, but you might be. I don't recall all the details, but I do remember there's certain triggers that work and certain areas that don't work. So it's not a very common product that people use. Even on this conference, they talked about it, and it really is like, it works in some cases, it doesn't in others. I was around it when I was at Caltrans, so coming, what highway was that? Highway 20, heading over to Clear Lake, they cold recycled the first section off of I-5 for five or 10 miles in there. But yeah, it's a real kind of unique, it has certain applications and it doesn't in others. So.
Is it cheaper than overlay?
Well, it is, but with all the variables, it kind of goes back to John's point about the recycling thing. There's a point when you start trying to recycle things too much that it doesn't make sense. And recycling is always good, but there is a point where it's like...
There's a limit.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense, so...
I have a question about the dovetail section there.
Okay.
Is that the deterioration of that road, is that an indication that it wasn't put in correctly in the first place? Do we need to upgrade our specifications for a new
I'm not sure.
Areas when a contractor comes in and builds a subdivision? Because that's all a, you know,
fairly new
subdivision.
Yeah. Right.
You're already overlaying or repairing roads and seeing major deterioration.
You know, that area has a lot of water in it.
Right.
And that's why you have a lot of water coming up through the alligatoring. So that changes your... It probably needed to be beefed up in that area. But the design standards that you have may be adequate. I don't know what your design standards are for thickness of asphalt and base rock.
But in certain areas, should that be taken into consideration?
Sure, yeah.
The design standards. In other words, if it is a wet area...
Yes.
Should it have fabric under it? Should it have...
Right. Yeah, you'd want... you could use a fabric, you can use a little bit deeper base rock, a little bit more asphalt. It all increases your structure number. And But I think the killer in that area is the water. You know, I think that's... Because you see water infiltrating up through it.
Well, I'm just trying to think ahead. Okay, if we start building, have subdivisions starting up again, if the economy ever...
Absolutely. Absolutely.
More than just the design standards we have set in place now, they should be designed also for the area that it's being put into, not just a standard flat
correct
design standard for
yep
everybody.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
So they might need to be...
That's a good idea.
Well, and one thing, you can go to standard set... not to diverge too much, but I took on a project for a special road district in La Pine. And they have, it's a special road district, it's county-owned property, so it's the road's been dedicated to the county, but they have to maintain it. And they have a lot of people coming from kind of cross streets. And so they have rock on it, and it's just getting beat up, because you have all these people to the south that are driving through it, and it's just tearing the road up. And rock is more costly than asphalt when you look at a road. Asphalt's really a cheaper way to go into the long term. So I went kind of helped them on some cost estimating, got into the county minimum standard, which is 2 inches of asphalt and 6 inches of base rock. And it's like, man, that is really skinny. But they have some really good separate over there, and that's that almost up into the excellent range. So I ran through all the traffic numbers and the pavement design, and they still come up with 3 inches of asphalt and I think it's 4 or 5 inches, maybe 6 inches of base rock and 3 inches of asphalt. The 2 inches of asphalt are really a lean, you don't want to get down there. So I called the county engineer and talked to him a little bit. I said, you know, this 2 and 6 seems a little skinny. We're going to do a California bearing ratio test on it. Would you recommend that? Because it seems like you really need to know what your subgrade is going forward. And it kind of seems like your standards are a little light. It was just, you know, we've had a lot of troubles of our residential streets breaking down over not too much of time. It's like, that's because they're so skinny. So as an agency, it's important to make sure you have the right structure section for your road, or else as a city, what happens is they build it and then they give it to you and then it's your headache. So,
well, there's several factors. You talk about the water, it's also traffic, as well as the subs, you know, what's under it.
Yeah.
There's, you know, all the standards. So you can't just use one size fits all.
Correct.
And you don't want to overbuild for a street that's a like a dead end street, that's a cul-de-sac. So
exactly. Yeah.
Aaron, how thick is Comstock, South Comstock?
It varies a lot. There were some places that, because they ground, there were some places they didn't have to grind and they went right over, and it's, you know, it's probably 6 to 8 inches thick. There's other places where it's 4, 2 lifts of 2, and that sort of thing. So
we're like a minimum of 4.
Yeah.
Going down there.
Yeah. And I would say that's the very minimum. It's mostly thicker than that. Yeah, it is hard to tell what's wrong sometimes. That stretch of 4th that we did, they told me for sure that there's the subgrade must be gone. There must be nothing there. And so we planned these dig outs, and they made some cuts and started digging. They were going to replace the subgrade. And they got down there, and there was a good solid 12 inches of base with fabric under it. And it was just a matter that there was too much, there was more water in there than what they had planned on. So from the, looking from the surface, it is, sometimes it's really hard to tell what's down there, what the problem is.
Well, I know that that water moves stuff under the surface. I've worked on places where there's been a good foot or more of soil just drop, and it wasn't from the surface, it was from the water flow underground washing the sediment out and everything settling down too.
A good example, a lot of engineers, Casa de Loma right here at the very end, there's like a house right in this area, and then at the very end, there's nothing. I mean, the guy parks his trailer up there. Right. There's some pretty significant cracking there. Aaron and I, a couple years ago, drove through there, and I pointed out to Aaron, I said, most of your engineers right now would say this is a subgrade failure, but it's not. It's a cracking of asphalt failure. It's the aging of asphalt. It's not a load thing because there's no loads
there's
up there.
There's not much traffic there.
So a lot of engineers, when they see that flexing, go, oh man, that's a subgrade thing. We better go all the way down to the bottom. And it's like, no. Let's not go there unless you don't have to.
So we have it laid out here, both the slurry and the...
Yeah, and those are just some parameters. Like we said, if you guys... had some other thoughts or whatever, we'd be glad to entertain those. And
well, if we had unlimited funds, it'd be nice to do them all, right?
Sure.
Or maybe we could add some more if we get some more money.
Yeah, sure. Next year there'll be the same amount, and we hope that we're gaining on that. You know, this got instituted, what, three?
Couple
this
years.
This is the third year. This will be the third year.
Yeah.
And there were only overlays.
I put in a 5-year plan, and we're just continuing it out 5 years each time so far. So.
That's good.
Yeah. So do you have identified what next year's streets will be?
You're looking at them.
The slurries are on the same. Well, they're all on the same.
Yeah.
This is for the next budget year, is what you're
so
looking
we'll
for.
Be picking off of this list.
Yeah, we'll add some more
next
as well.
Be money for this entire list.
No.
Right. So what doesn't get done, we'll come back to you with the same ones and maybe some others, but
Well, keep dreaming, mister.
Good job.
Hey.
Appreciate it.
So do you want to just, him to just say you...
I would recommend.
Do you guys want to do a motion? Or do you think you need a motion?
Go with what he's recommended, I think, too.
So do we want a motion to that effect?
Or you just want consensus, up to you, but...
Could entertain a motion from somebody?
Motion to,
Go by the recommendation.
Go by Aaron's recommendation on the roads that he has highlighted.
I say.
For slurry and or lighting.
Okay, that sound good? Okay, I have a motion in a second.
Commissioner Classen?
Aye.
Commissioner Flick?
Aye.
Commissioner Sarnowski?
Aye.
Commissioner Van Sickle?
Aye.
Commissioner Sumner?
Aye.
Commissioner Clark?
Aye.
And Chair Lesby?
Aye.
Now, before we get too far away from the roads here, are we getting ODOT to do anything about Central?
Are we what?
Getting ODOT to do anything about Central or a county near the darn thing belongs to?
Depends on which part of Central you're talking about.
Well, down in front of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, all of that scratch and patch they did a couple, two, 3 years ago was all failing. All the stuff that's in front of the new bank up on the east side, that's all failing.
You mean the credit union?
Yeah.
That would be ours.
if I could name.
Please do.
ODOT, no, they've not responded. They're dragging their feet on their section ownership. You know, they want us to take that over. They're not going to do much on that.
We don't want it.
Now, down near the credit union, that's ours. And that's part of, we have a big, giant plan to get an ODOT grant or get that money from ODOT and turn it into a grant, a bigger grant, and make that all new and nice. Now out to, from like Chop Smart on out, that's also ours, out to the county line out there that is right near St. John, I
just
think.
Just past St. John.
Right at St. John.
Or past J Street.
Quail Run out there, yeah.
I think it's this side of J. I think it's...
Jade is inside.
Okay. Anyway, that's going to, if I have my way, that's going to get rotated onto this pavement management overlay list in the next year. So that outer portion.
The left turn lane going south on Kalapuya is a major disaster.
Left turn lane going south on Kalapuya. That would be county.
Okay.
Left turn lane on Kalapuya.
No, left turn lane on Central going on to Kalapuya.
Oh, on Central.
Going heading south.
Going south on Kalapuya.
Turning on to Kalapuya?
That left turn lane is trash.
So right here, when you look at coming this way, going on to right
so
there,
between
right,
State right, and Kalapuya?
Right on Central.
I know.
Yeah, between State. Between State and Kalapuya, the left turn lane in front of the liquor store.
Are you getting this, Aaron? This is your stuff.
Absolutely. I don't know. It's not my stuff. It's.
I mean, it's ODOT.
It's ODOT and it's county, and I don't know what.
Originally, I heard a couple, two, 3 years ago that there was a plan to fix Kalapuya between Everett and Central, and that never happened.
Yeah, that's something else to me. I don't know. I didn't hear about that. That might have been right before I came, or I'm not sure of that plan. I love it.
Can't play the inheritance card.
I'm not sure they can do a lot if it belongs to the county or the state either.
That's an ODOT street, too.
So for Central, right, this Kalapuya to the freeway is ODOT's, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then it's the city's from this point.
Mm-mm.
Actually, so that's still...
Is that still ODOT's?
Yeah. It's theirs and it's the state's.
Okay.
ODOT knows it's a problem. It's been like that since I moved here 10 years ago.
Down to the handicap, the ADA ramps, and it's all terrible. Patricia and I have walked that together, and her little cart almost tips over going into those things. We sort of feel like our hands are tied a little bit on that. I don't know what to say about that stretch. It's.
I mean, I guess we could pester them again. We pester them once or twice a year. We don't necessarily get anything done.
How about come out and walk with me? Oh, they might have a good really time.
Give me the guy's number. I'll call him weekly.
It's probably not kosher to patch it instead of a bill.
No, but we have gone out and filled potholes before because people think it's our roads. We get a lot of complaints.
Yeah, so that section from, let's say, here to the freeway has quite a bit of spots where the old patches have had problems and they just need to be replaced.
It's cracked, water gets in there, and it just displaces everything.
Making the right turn from Palpillion to Central.
Well, there is a grand plan. I don't know if it's going to happen. Nobody does. But if it happens, it'll be grand.
Can't wait.
And all that will be fixed.
I think most of the holes that show up and then the city ends up filling eventually. Anyway.
Yeah, we do. We
there
do.
There's that one coming where you make a left-hand turn coming out of Oakland onto Central.
Yeah.
There was a huge pothole there, what, 2 years ago?
And it was
bending a wheel on it.
So here's a funny thing for all you guys to understand. There's a minimum standard. It's a state law in Oregon. You have to have a minimum standard on your roads. And if people bend rims, the city or the county or ODOT is responsible for replacing the wheels and the linemen.
You've already replaced three.
Well, I'm just informing you.
Don't drive so fast, Adam.
That's what I was thinking.
You got to prove it was that, though.
That huge hole when you turned from Waite Street onto Southside. Right there around the turn, you guys filled that 2 years ago. That swallowed my entire wheel.
Oh, man.
I had one.
It out of my hand.
I had one car that had bent the rim. It was a little Honda Civic. It just popped the rim, bent it. Didn't take the tire out. The tire was okay.
Yeah.
And what was funny is there was a line of hubcaps along. It was a freeway. Along the freeway. There was a line of hubcaps. And I was talking, and I worked for ODOT at the time, and I was talking to their maintenance guy, and I'm like, hey, like, This thing swallowed you and spit you out. I mean, it bent the rim.
So bad it wouldn't hold air anymore.
Oh, but you know what's funny is they actually paid for mine. Somebody else had a bent rim and two bent rims, two pop tires, and alignment. And they showed on the form they were going the wrong direction and they didn't get paid. So it's kind of a little bit of a game. It's like, but there's a minimum statewide thing. So one thing in this pavement, just for you guys to roll around, in this pavement preservation conference, they talked about potholes, and the guy, the presenter, was right on. And he pointed out that if you have a pothole on a road, and this actually happened in Portland, and it was a sheriff's deputy that got killed on a pothole in Portland, and it was 3, 4, or 5 years ago, something like that. But his point is, legally, it's important to fill your potholes because those turn into liabilities. There's a minimum standard. A motorcycle at night or during the day is not going to expect to be swallowed up by a hole. And so if you're driving down the road and you swerve and you hit a pedestrian, right? I mean, there's all these scenarios when you look at roads that are important to make sure to keep them up to that minimum standard. So the presenter did a very good job talking about the legal aspects of that. So just, there are legal ramifications to those minor things as potholes, like this.
So, just to echo what Vicki said a while ago, is that you guys feel free to call me or email me or whatever if you see one, because we're out there, but we don't. If you're driving on the same street every day, you know exactly where that one pothole is that you got to try to avoid or whatever it is, and we may not see that, and we. Unfortunately, when it comes to potholes, we are reactionary. We have to go on people's calls and complaints. And
one that bent it bad, I called Dan. And he went out and had somebody fill it.
Yeah, well, that's how, unfortunately, that's how we get a lot of our stuff done. Or you guys are our eyes, so, if you see something that we haven't, I mean, and I don't know if you have the list. Do they have the list, like the phone list and the email list? You guys don't?
Of who?
Of the employees and that sort of thing?
No.
Well, you can call public. You can call.
They know how to get a hold of me.
The public
works
office, and
they know mine, and they know Christie's.
I got Public Works at City Hall.
Good.
That gets you to us.
You're next door, so I don't.
You can send it to any of us. We can get it to Aaron.
Yeah.
I have your cell phone number.
Yep.
You're toast.
All right. Can we move on to economic development report?
Yes, please. Okay, such exciting stuff going on here. So at the last, the workshop, Jerry was there and talked about the Exit 136 lands, and that we had gone to the Douglas County Industrial Development Boards to recruit some funds. We received those funds, and so now we're moving forward with a meeting next week. Unfortunately, I will be out, so I won't get to be there, but the property owners are meeting with Todd Chase and Jerry, so moving forward on that one. Vicki's going to be there, so that will be wonderful. Huh?
How much money did they get?
It's $5,000, and so that'll go with that additional $5,000. So then, just kind of run through this to get you guys out of here. The Sutherland Economic Development Plan, I wanted to say thank you to Patricia and Adam and Carlene. We all met with Jerry, started the brainstorming process. So we're going to kind of, based on the ideas that they came up with, we're going to create our own business recruitment initiatives as opposed to relying on the county. Recruit business expansion to assist in serving our local businesses in the area, and determine what kind of industries would be interested in our area. So we'll begin by determining what the competing industries are with our local businesses, as well as developing a relationship with our local businesses. So maybe start going out and talking to our local businesses, seeing what their needs are, seeing how we can help them, kind of get that bond established and move on from there. So it's going to be exciting. Stay tuned. I attended the DCIDB meeting today, and Jerry mentioned briefly about the spec building. Some of you might already have known, but over off of Taylor, the industrial park area, that property they had and worked on building like just a shell, an industrial building shell. And so they have given consensus today to not build the structure, but to start working on the permits. So like the wetlands permits, and kind of get the ball rolling to get it to where it's shovel ready. So then they'll kind of take step by step the processes back to the Board of Commissioners. So then they're getting the Board of Commissioners approval. So what the industrial board does is takes the recommendations to the Board of Commissioners. Then the Board of Commissioners has to approve them. So then there's no money that's actually coming out of that fund that's established for this individual
property
or, and not necessarily just this property, but this.
It's been earmarked for right. our bill.
Right, but it could go to another industrial property, but it's for this specific use. It's money that was lottery money or something that's been put away for this specific use. And so anyway, they're focusing on this property right now, so they're going to start getting the permits pulled and move forward. So I'll keep you updated on that as the meetings go by and see where we are with it. But the permitting process just for the wetlands and the joint applications, they can take 6 to 8 months. It could take a year. I mean, it takes time, so. That's it in a nutshell.
Public comment. Public. You're the only public.
Do you want to go over this at all, John?
What is that? Utilities?
The activity report?
Sure. Hit it quickly.
Hit it quickly. Okay. Red Rock Trail Phase 2. Bid opening was on the 12th. They received 11 bids, which is amazing. They are reviewing a low bidder right now, and it's an ODOT administrative project, so we won't know for another 4 weeks or 4 to 6 weeks, but it's coming along. You heard about the pavement management program tonight, striping and crosswalks. Aaron told me he's here, but he told me that got delayed, and CMB will be doing the striping as soon as they can get it on their schedule.
So Friday, Saturday.
Pardon me?
Friday or Friday
this
and
week?
Saturday.
For sure. Oh, nice. So there you go. Friday, Saturday. So you should see some striping happening.
Where?
along Central at Umatilla, Willamette, in front of Abbey's, the post office, Grove, railroad crossing on 6th. wastewater treatment plant improvements, nothing's really changed there. We did get our quotes in for the pre-design. There is a pre-design team that's reviewed them. They've chosen the top two. There was only three submitted. And we'll be interviewing those two on Thursday of this week. Nothing much happened with building. You can read it on your paper, on your report there. I don't think I had anything new in the Kim's Court changed a little bit. They decided not to do the structures, but to bring in pre-built homes, park model homes, which is still a nice improvement from what they had, and they'll be doing some sidewalks, and I think you'll see a big change there, but it's not quite the change they had originally proposed.
Where was that?
Kim's Court.
Okay.
What about North Star? I guess bought the welding shop, and then they got a grade. They did a bunch of work over there on the Rock Road, where Kalapuya goes on up past Second.
Who did the work up there? Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, Dick Weaver's just doing some parking lot cleanup.
Oh,
for
okay.
And, they've been cabling off the Kalapuya at Second Street.
Oh, is that right? Well.
I don't know, I just noticed it. I live right there in the
right.
corner.
Right. Well, I'll look at
maybe
that.
Maybe you want to take a check on that one.
Yeah. I don't know where it.
They've got where they can drive the big semis all the way around the building, so they might be doing that just to keep people from getting back there until they get a fence up back there or something.
Right.
Like gate.
No, I wasn't aware of that.
Pardon?
I said, I wasn't aware of that. So anyway, you all have one of these reports. If you have to see something I didn't mention, you have a question, call me. I think we've probably been here long enough tonight.
I do want to remind everybody, April 6th at 6 o'clock, be here.
Special
Please.
Meeting.
Please, special meeting, marijuana.
Here?
Dispensaries, here.
Oh, God, I was wondering if it was at UCC or something.
No, it's right here.
No, right here, public hearing, 6 o'clock.
What's the deal with the state versus the federal law? Which one has priority?
Stay tuned for the hearing.
Good answer, Christy.
The federal law is still illegal.
That's true.
You say it's a public hearing. Is it put on by planning commission?
Yes, the planning commission, and then the city council will follow for their hearings immediately after. They're at 7. So
you will have an ordinance. Is it a public hearing to change the
right. development code?
And then the council will have an ordinance if you recommend it. And they'll be meeting right after you. And the ordinance will have an emergency clause on it, because if we're going to set standards, we have to get them passed now, before May 1st.
Well, we could set the standards, nothing under a 5-mile radius of a school.
Well, I will tell you that I had a conversation with the county and was encouraged to take a look at that and make sure we didn't set our setback so far that we banned it completely, because we'll probably get sued if we do that. So
I can't do the 5-mile.
Probably not.
From a public.
Well, even what we originally had, I was a little tight. So I have an attorney looking at it now to make sure we aren't putting ourselves in a position to get sued.
I assume we're going to have a recommendation.
Right, and I hope to have an attorney here for your meeting too. Probably right here, but.
Well, we see the recommendation. Changes.
We'll get you some information before the meeting, kind of like your regular. I email you some information prior, so we'll do the same.
You will see it.
Okay.
I read an article that they are having a lot of home explosions from everybody trying to extract the marijuana.
Where is this at?
It was either Colorado or Washington. I don't
know
the states.
There's one in West Eugene here.
They said it like doubled in the last year, so we can expect that, I guess.
Home explosions.
Okay, is there anything else from the commissioners? Anybody?
Wait a minute. there might be something from the audience.
I already checked the audience.